It is absolutely essential to release all prisoners. It is absolutely essential to respect the result of the elections.
International outrage grows against Myanmar military. It's Friday, March 12th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online. We're at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, 1 year has passed since the coronavirus outbreak was declared a global pandemic. We look at many of its impacts throughout Asia and the world on today's VOA Asia. Myanmar's military junta has accused deposed de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi of accepting more than $500,000 in bribes, as another day of protests resulted in more deaths among the demonstrators. Suu Kyi is already facing four criminal charges of illegally possessing six unregistered walkie-talkie radios, operating communications equipment without a license, violating COVID-19 protocols by holding public gatherings, and attempting to incite public unrest. On the streets, Nguyen Linh Han, chairperson of Student Social Relief Volunteer Association, tells VOA Burmese that eight people were killed, six others injured, when police opened fire on protesters surrounding a police station in the central town of Myang. There were also reports of deaths in the main city of Yangon and the second largest city of Mandalay. The bloodshed in Myanmar has drawn an unusual consensus from the 15 nations on the UN Security Council, which adopted its strongest statement to date condemning the violence against peaceful protesters, including against women, youth, and children. UN Chief Antonio Guterres called for Myanmar's military to immediately restore the democratically elected government.
It is absolutely essential to release all prisoners. It is absolutely essential to respect the result of the elections, and to allow for a situation in which we move back to a democratic transition that was not a perfect one. I mean, we did not live in a perfect democracy in Myanmar. It was still heavily under military control in many aspects, which makes this coup even more difficult to understand. I mean, especially the accusations of electoral fraud by those that were largely in control of the country. But with all its imperfections, I believe that it is important to go back to where we were before.
The UN Security Council statement was a diplomatic step forward, as China and Russia had until Wednesday been willing to defend the action of Myanmar's military junta, which seized complete power in a February 1st coup, ousting the civilian government and arresting its leader Aung San Suu Kyi. Protests have increased weekly across Myanmar since the coup. More than 60 demonstrators have been killed across the country as the junta's security forces opened fire with tear gas, rubber bullets, slingshots, and live ammunition. Tom Andrews, the UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in Myanmar, says the military's crackdown likely meets the legal threshold for crimes against humanity. For residents, nightly internet shutdowns in Myanmar are part of a strategy employed by many governments worldwide in times of crises. But they come with costs. VOA's Michelle Quinn reports.
Nighttime in Myanmar, the country enters a digital curfew. In the morning, people check their phones to see if the internet is on. Then thousands jump on Siphon, a circumvention app to access sites such as Facebook, Twitter, and others, which the military junta has ordered blocked. From his office in Toronto, Canada, Michael Hull, president of Siphon, can see as people rush to get on Siphon's servers. Siphon works with media outlets such as VOA.
The number of occurrences is unprecedented. And then from our point of view, from Siphon's point of view, the number of people that are having to utilize the Siphon network even after the network is restored is a new phenomenon.
It's unclear why the Myanmar military government, which seized control on February 1, is conducting nightly internet shutdowns. Governments typically argue that an internet shutdown helps maintain security in a time of crisis. Since the takeover, Myanmar has erupted in protests, with dozens of protesters killed.
The problem is that all the internet stuff is just a kind of prelude to something else. Prelude to greater crackdown, harsher use of force, more detentions of peaceful protesters.
In 2020, there were 155 internet shutdowns in 29 countries, according to Access Now, a nonprofit digital rights group. While fewer than in the prior 2 years, the blockages are still damaging. India, with 109 shutdowns, mostly in Indian-administered Kashmir, had the highest number. In Belarus, the internet went down in the European nation for 61 hours in August, after the presidential election. In addition to shutdowns, some governments are installing new censorship and surveillance capabilities on the network. Cambodia is setting up an internet gateway that critics say will give the government the ability to surveil and censor internet users. A U.S. State Department spokeswoman expressed concern.
You know, we have a significant amount of Khmer Americans who are here in the United States, and we want to ensure that they're able to freely speak to their family and their friends and relatives who are still back in the country.
In a place like Myanmar, internet shutdowns and blockages of social media sites come with economic costs and political risk.
But they're also just deeply unpopular. It's, they must really want to shut down the information flow because people rely on the internet.
Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Myanmar junta accuses Aung San Suu Kyi of accepting bribes. Rights groups urge India to halt plans to deport Rohingya refugees to Myanmar. China approves changes to Hong Kong's electoral process, further tightening control of the city. U.S. holds scaled-down military drills with South Korea. Sharing news about Tibet is high risk for all involved. You'll find these stories and many more, expanded with video, audio, and text, on our website, voanews.com. And check us out at Facebook at VOA Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia. When the coronavirus first emerged, many East Asian countries were hailed as global examples due to their impressive containment efforts. But as the one-year anniversary of the pandemic is here, some of those countries are falling behind in their vaccine campaigns, as we hear from VOA's Bill Gallo from Seoul.
South Korea was among the first countries hit by the coronavirus. And the virus hit hard, devastating its third-largest city in February. But South Korea contained the pandemic within weeks, winning praise for its formula of track, treat, and trace. It may then come as a surprise that South Korea was among the last developed countries to start vaccinations. They're not alone. By some estimates, it may be at least the middle of 2022 before even the wealthiest parts of East Asia get widespread vaccines. In South Korea, there were high hopes for a domestically produced vaccine, but that hasn't happened, leading some to question whether Seoul was overconfident.
You can guarantee testing. You can guarantee public health. I mean, of course, it's not easy, but these are things you just get done. But a vaccine is science, and it's not like you just spend a bit of time and money and you get a vaccine. There's a lot of luck, experiments, and all this.
Doctor and academic Ogon Gorel says vaccine nationalism may be partly responsible for the delay.
We can do things on our own and so forth, and perhaps we're forced to do things on our own, plus we may want to do things on our own. And so perhaps some of the partnerships and the interactions with external vaccine producers may not have been developed as rapidly. And so Korea is late in this game.
Another reason some Asian countries delayed the vaccine, the virus never spread out of control, unlike in the United States and Britain, says Fitch analyst Anwita Basu.
The vaccination in these two countries is a lot more important than for countries like South Korea, countries like Japan, where they can take a more cautious approach because they do have the ability to, control the spread in other ways.
For South Korea, those tools included fast and affordable coronavirus tests. It also meant empowering the government to conduct intense contact tracing using cell phone and other data. But those steps will only contain the pandemic. Vaccines, the one tool that could end it, are happening at a much slower pace. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Happening now in Asia, ceremonies were held Thursday as Japan marked the 10th anniversary of an earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear disaster that hit the northeastern region of the country, where many survivors' lives are still on hold. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The coronavirus pandemic affected millions of people in South and Central Asia. VOA's Bejan Hamdard shines a light on the ups and downs of life under COVID-19 in this region.
Afghanistan's health minister announced a state of emergency in its western province of Herat about this time last year as the first case of coronavirus emerged in Afghanistan.
With a confirmed positive case of coronavirus, I should inform you that we've taken action right away to identify it. We hold the patient in a standard hospital in quarantine and with no communication outside. There is no health threat from him to the locals.
The coronavirus outbreak sent Afghans living in Iran back to Afghanistan in record numbers. The fear of the pandemic also forced the Afghan government to shut its borders with Iran as well as Pakistan. In Pakistan, the virus has caused more than 13,000 deaths, according to Johns Hopkins University. Fear of the pandemic sent some residents searching for any kind of treatments. Even some unproven herbal remedies became widely available.
I had heard from our elders that the extract of garlic and ginger is really good for viruses. We're using that right now, and it'll help us, God willing.
A doctor friend of mine suggested that I drink saffron tea, which will prevent me from getting a cold or flu. And also, I will not have a sore throat. I am confident that I will avoid this virus, too.
While the number of deaths caused by the virus in Bangladesh is less than 9,000, the country's biggest challenge in a pandemic year was managing the virus in the highly crowded Rohingya refugee camps. With no access to the outside world, inaccurate rumors easily spread among some in the camps.
I heard that if one gets the virus, their hands and feet would become disabled. And if there is a saliva drop through the mouth, the infected person would start barking like a dog.
But education measures were soon put in place.
Being uninformed can at times spread false rumors inside the Rohingya camp. We are raising awareness through some of the educated Rohingyas within the camp.
By summer, countries in South and Central Asia began to ease some of the lockdown restrictions. In Turkey, mosques began to host prayer sessions and businesses began to open back up, though most required masks and social distancing. Restaurants began trying to innovate ways to make their customers feel safe.
People who are used to going out are scared to do so. Staying home due to the pandemic affected our relationships. It demoralized us. That's why we wanted to create a place where people could feel comfortable in an isolated setting.
But the pandemic also brought out the best in people. In Iraq's northern Soleimania city, a charity group donated food items to families who lost their jobs. Afghanistan's girls' robotic team shifted their focus to build ventilators for local hospitals. A garment factory in Iraq began to make face masks, and in Turkey, vocational school students began making disinfectants. Bejan Hamdard, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia, at least 27 people in Indonesia are dead, 39 others injured, after a tourist bus plunged into a ravine on the island of Java after its brakes apparently malfunctioned, according to authorities. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today on VOA Asia. The COVID-19 epidemic has been especially hard in the United States. Before the pandemic, the United States considered itself one of the best prepared countries in the world for a health crisis. The pandemic proved otherwise. 1 year into the crisis, more than a half million Americans have died, as we hear from VOA's Steve Barragona.
By early May of 2020, the United States had the largest percentage of people sick with COVID-19 of all the G7 industrialized countries. 1 year in, no one else is close. And the United States is third in deaths by population.
America's public health resilience has been shown to be an utter failure with COVID-19. You know, we're the richest country in the world and the poorest performer on a pandemic. That's inexcusable.
Costin says the U.S. public health system has been starved for funding and staff for years. It could not handle the load when the pandemic hit. But he and others place much of the blame on former President Donald Trump's administration.
It was a response that was not based on science, it was not well organized, and it did not communicate in a forthright way with the public.
Supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light, and I think you said that hasn't been checked, but you're going to test it.
Promoting unreliable treatments, sidelining scientists, and politicizing basic prevention, experts accuse Trump of undermining America's response to the pandemic. Trump does get credit for investing in the fastest vaccine development in history, an effort starting to pay dividends. But since Joe Biden took over the presidency in January, top experts are visibly relieved.
And by comparison, this is night and day.
On day one, they released a plan. We didn't have a plan for a whole year, and it was a good plan.
The idea that you can get up here and talk about what you know, what the evidence, what the science is, and know that's it. Let the science speak. It is somewhat of a liberating feeling.
But the science says there is a long way to go. Infection rates are down, but dangerous variants are spreading. Vaccines are rolling out, but getting shots is difficult and riddled with racial inequalities. Vaccine hesitancy is declining, but still worryingly high. The virus is not going away anytime soon, but Gostin says it will get more manageable.
We're going to have to be vigilant. It's not going to be over, but we're going to learn to live with COVID-19, and we'll live with it, you know, reasonably well.
1 year down, maybe more to go, but experts say they may not be as bad. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, China's national legislature has approved a package of changes to Hong Kong's electoral process that gives the central government in Beijing tighter control over the city's legislature, a move critics say will further diminish the city's pro-democracy movement. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, 1 year has passed since the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a pandemic. VOA Steve Barragona rejoins us for a look at what the coming months and years may look like.
After a year of empty streets and full hospitals in much of the U.S., the beginning of the end is in sight.
But I think by the fall, unless there's something very bad with variants that comes along, we're going to see sporting events in person, we're going to see social events, movies, theater, restaurants and bars.
Vaccinations are speeding up. A third vaccine is online from Johnson & Johnson. And a rival company, Merck, will help increase supplies in a deal brokered by President Joe Biden's administration.
We're now on track to have enough vaccine supply for every adult in America by the end of May.
We'll have an oversupply, and I suspect that by the summer, we'll start to be donating our doses to low- and middle-income countries.
Gostin says it's in the interest of wealthy countries to make sure lower-income countries get vaccinated. Dangerous variants can appear anywhere the virus is spreading. They could slow the return to normal. Some are already weakening the vaccines. The shots still look effective, but new variants will keep evolving.
They're essentially a shot across the bow, telling us that this virus is sneaky, and it has the ability to evade our defenses.
Another thing that could slow the return to normal? Yeah. Relaxing control measures too soon, says University of Washington epidemiologist Ali Mokhtad.
So we made the same mistake last year, remember? And we have to be very careful right now. We should not repeat the same mistake, especially at a time where we know there are more variants coming up.
And yet, several states are doing just that. Texas Governor Greg Abbott.
All businesses of any type are allowed to open 100%. Also, I am ending the statewide mask mandate.
Biden called the move Neanderthal thinking.
I think it's a big mistake. Look, I hope everybody's realized by now these masks make a difference.
In the long term, the biggest problem may be people who do not trust the vaccines. Surveys say that's about a quarter of Americans, a third of people in six African countries, and 79% in Lebanon, to name a few.
There is deep hesitancy. I think it will people will get less hesitant as they see this working and they see their neighbors and family members getting vaccinated. But there will be a small group of people who don't want the vaccine.
That sets the stage for flare-ups down the road. Ultimately, COVID-19 may be here to stay, so an annual COVID shot may be too. Experts say that means many more countries need vaccine manufacturing plants, so the world is not stuck again with shots for rich countries while everyone else is left behind. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
A glove factory in New York City called Wing Plus Weft Gloves has a unique Washington, D.C. connection for decades. But when the coronavirus crisis erupted, this woman-owned small business had to reinvent itself. Nina Vishneva has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
A detail, a small accessory, not that necessary, but so elegant. Gloves may not be the must-wear these days, but they provide a more polished look.
Lady Gaga, we have Willow Smith, Britney Spears, Paris Hilton, Michelle Obama.
For all those women and thousands of others, light thin gloves have been made here for almost a century. Katie Sue Nicholas is the owner of this small business, whose employees are all women. Sylvie the Cat oversees the working process and keeps an eye on the First Lady Jill Biden's glove pattern.
Jill Biden, Dr. Biden, wore our gloves for the inauguration. She wore them in three separate outfits.
The then future First Lady's designers brought her hand measurements, discussed the style of the gloves and the material. Everything clients always do.
It was the only skin that I had, so those particular colors for her gloves.
The shop is located in New York City's Garment District, once the center of the U.S. fashion industry. Over time, office workers drove out tailors. Today, Wing and Weft Gloves is the only glove-making shop left here.
Every First Lady since Jackie Kennedy, not necessarily for the inauguration, but for events that happened during the years.
In this cozy space, gloves are made for most Manhattan plays and musicals, as well as for movies. But there's been little work here since Broadway was put on an indefinite pause in March 2020.
We only thought that it was going to take us about a week or two to get back and running. I think about by the third week, that was when I knew that things were not going to return to normal.
Theater gloves gave way to medical face masks as seamstresses started working from home. Together with other shops, Nicholas has tried to keep her employees busy until Broadway comes back.
Glove makers, milliners, embroiderers, pleaters, people who sell undergarments, we all conglomerated to form this coalition.
Recently, the shop started producing gloves with an antibacterial coating. For Nicholas and her employees, it's important to stay safe during the pandemic, but also to do it with style.
I don't know if this is my size. Ooh, we'll see. This is probably too snug for me. But very nice looking glove and something that people can use over and over again and wash. Touchscreen and all ready to be thrown into the washer.
The materials used here are mostly recycled plastic, a nod to the modern focus on environmentalism. But there is still room for just plain elegance.
And they're fabulous. Everybody always wants them, but these are mine.
For Nina Vishnuwe in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
We're always glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening today. Even though our program is coming to a conclusion, you can join us again at the same time tomorrow. And in the meantime, we're online. YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all under the name VOA Asia. We also like to thank those who help bring the program to you each and every day. Our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.